Good morning. My name is Dominic, and good to see you. Hope you've had a good week. Hillary and I were off on vacation last week, enjoyed some time away up in the beautiful state of Oregon. Any Oregon fans in the room? Three of you. That was my first trip, and I love your state, and it was very nice. It was like the East Coast. It rained, and things were green there. I do love Northern California, but it's different. We're glad you're here this morning. Hope this week has treated you well. This morning, we're going to dive back into our study of the Gospel of Matthew. If you've just been new, and I've met some people who have just started coming here over the summer, and you're like, hang on a second, we were in Matthew? Yeah, we were back in the spring and in the fall, and we kind of we took a pause right in the middle and did something different in the summer, and now we're going to jump back in, but don't worry, you can pick right up where we left off as well. Today, I want to convince you of something. And I thought I'd go ahead and tell you that ahead of time so you know my agenda and where I'm going this morning. But I want to convince you today that you can choose to see that your everyday, what we might call ordinary life, maybe isn't as ordinary as you think. I hope, like by the time we're done today, that you're going to see that the things that maybe we take for granted, the things that are kind of the normal everyday moments of life, maybe have a bit more meaning or have the potential to have more meaning than you ever realized. And I want to convince you of doing that, not by some fancy argument, but I want to tell you a story, actually quite a strange story of something that happened to Jesus. And it's something that that I think if we get a hold of today and if we take in, that could help us kind of look at our everyday life in such a way that we begin to make a choice. That we make a choice in our everyday moments to see those moments, to see something in those moments that maybe God is doing something more than we might normally see. In essence, I want you to make a choice today to believe that God is at work through the person of Jesus. Now, I know that's a big, tall order, and I think Brandon has expressed it well, that we realize not everyone's in the same place, and we come from a wide spectrum of spiritual belief and pursuit, and we get that. But for many people in this room, you may have made a decision to believe in Jesus at some point in your life. Maybe you can think back to this moment. I know for me, I can think back to that moment and to that room back right before ninth grade. Maybe you've told stories of this moment. But here's the interesting thing about choices, wherever you are in your belief system. The interesting thing about choices is I think choices are ongoing decisions. Choices actually are ongoing decisions. So think about this. Think about like marriage, for example. If you're married, at some point you made a decision to marry your spouse. But as you probably know, if you're married, every single day you're making, in essence, that choice again, by being the husband or by being the wife that God's created and called you to be. Or maybe think about your job. At some point, you signed on and accepted an offer to work wherever you're working. But every day that you're there, and every day that you're present, every day that you're engaged, every day that you work diligently, you're making that choice again to be at that job and to be that employee that God's called you to be. So my hope today is that you would choose Jesus, and not maybe as a moment, although maybe that's for you today to make that decision for the first time, but my hope today is that you would choose to believe that God's at work through Jesus in your life in the everyday moments, that you get to a place where you look at your everyday moments and begin to ask the question, God, how are you at work right now? So again, we're going to be in the Gospel of Matthew. If you're not familiar with the Gospel of Matthew, it will be on the screen. Part of what I love about this series is that all of us get to hear about Jesus for ourselves. You can read along on the screen. If you're not that familiar with the Bible and not familiar with church, you can read this and hear this for yourself. But a few highlights to get us back into the story in the Gospel of Matthew. Matthew is writing to a collection of Jewish followers of Jesus, and he's writing about the mid-first century. We're not exactly sure of the exact date, but somewhere around there. But he's writing to a group of people who have a Jewish background, but they've come to believe that God is at work through Jesus in their lives. And part of the purpose of what Matthew wants to do in his writing of the life of Jesus on earth is that he wants people to see, he wants his audience to see, he wants us, I would think, to see today too, that Jesus is bringing the story of God together. That all of it's culminating. That the fulfillment is happening in and through Jesus. Matthew's trying to tie an old story together with what happened to Jesus and point us towards the future. In fact, today in the story we're going to look at, there are a lot of links back to the old Jewish story and what God had done in their past, as well as what they believed God would do in the future. We'll see some of those links as we go forward in the story today. Now, the immediate context of where we're going to be in Matthew chapter 17 is that in Matthew 16, Jesus has just had a discussion with his followers, and he's told them, you know what, soon I'm going to be going to Jerusalem, and I'm going to die. Which is, you know, if you walked into work tomorrow and your boss said, just letting you know, I'm not going to be around next week, you might be kind of freaked out. They're not really sure what to do with that information, but that's the information he's told them. He said, this is all going to connect a little bit later. They're not really sure, but even today's story is going to add a little bit more focus to the picture. So that's the immediate context of where we're going. We're going to be in Matthew chapter 17. You can Google it. You can follow along if you have a Bible paper version like me. It'll be on the screen. Matthew chapter 17, and the story begins like this in verse 1. After 6 days, Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John, the brother of James, and led them up a high mountain by themselves. There he was transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun, and his clothes became as white as the light. Okay, a couple things before we go on. First, Jesus takes three of his disciples, Peter, James, and John. These were kind of the three who were on the inside. Jesus had 12. He actually had a lot of followers in different ways, but he had three that he really spent time to kind of show unique experiences and have unique teaching moments with. That's Peter, James, and John. And he takes them up this mountain with him. So immediately we kind of know, like, hang on a second, Jesus has some intentionality here. I mean, what's about to happen? He didn't need them. In fact, they didn't bring anything about, and nothing that happens next is a result of what something they did. This could have happened alone, but Jesus saw that this was something that he wanted to pass on, that's something that was for them. So this is something he wants to show them, something he wants them to get a hold of, to grab hold of. And what happens is that he is transfigured, which is like one word that encompasses a massive moment. Now, this word transfigured in the original language is this word metamorpho. You can think of the word in English metamorphosis. So it's not like Jesus changed, but something about him was different. There's a sense of, and you can kind of see the description of his clothes and how he shines. There's almost this sense that glory, that the glory of heaven has kind of put aside the earthliness of Jesus for a second, and like the fullness of the glory of heaven is shining on him. So it's a pretty profound moment, that this moment, that something of glory has altered something that was ordinary, that this Jesus that they knew and talked with and ate with and laughed with, all of a sudden, he's looking a bit different. That glory has changed. Glory has come into a moment that they'll never forget. In fact, Peter, one of the people here, Peter later writes a letter, 2 Peter chapter 1. He writes about this particular experience, and he says, hey, we were eyewitnesses, and he uses these words that we just read over, but he says, we were eyewitnesses in 2 Peter 1. He says, we were eyewitnesses to majesty, to honor, to glory. And he's talking about this moment that this Jesus that they knew and had been following, all of a sudden things are different about him. It's a moment that stayed with them. It's a profound and really quite, in some ways, quite a strange moment. But it gets even stranger and gets even more interesting of what happens next in verses 3 and 4. It says, just then there appeared before them, so Jesus and his three disciples, now two other people show up, Moses and Elijah, and they're talking with Jesus. And Peter said to Jesus, Lord, it is good for us to be here. If you wish, I will put up three shelters, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah. Now, what's the deal with Moses and Elijah? Well, if you were a first century Jew, you had an expectation of what God would do in the world. You had a belief based on your history and based on the writings and scriptures that you believed that God wasn't done in the world. That as bad as things are, as bad as things were, God would bring things and put things right again. And part of the expectation that day, based on the scriptures, was that two people would come. Two people would be the first people to come and put in motion the future that God had planned, the good things that God had planned for his people and for the world. And the two people that would come would be in the line of Moses and the prophet Elijah. In fact, you can read these passages later, but in Deuteronomy chapter 18 in the Torah, it's said that one day God would send a prophet like Moses. Malachi chapter 4 says that before God starts the new world, Elijah would come and prepare the way. In fact, this was so embedded in the culture of Jesus' day, we even see this pop up in relation to John the Baptist. In the Gospel of John, chapter 1, again, you can read it later, people come to John the Baptist, who was hugely popular, and they say to him in chapter 1, they say, "Are you Elijah, or are you the prophet?" In other words, they mean the prophet in the line of Moses. This is what people were looking for and what they were expecting to come, that when these two come, everything starts. The future that God's been promising for centuries and beyond was going to start when these two came and prepared the way. So you got to imagine this moment. Imagine you're there. If your rabbi, that your rabbi takes you up a mountain, and all of a sudden there's this moment where he's changed, and his ordinary appearance now is somehow infused with the glory of heaven. And then while that's happening, two of Israel's greatest leaders, Moses and Elijah, who you know and would expect to be part of what something God is doing in the future, they show up. You know in that moment, this is something unlike anything else. This is a profound moment. And Peter gets that. Peter sees that because Peter says, "Jesus, it's really good that we're here." Wow. Okay, how about an idea, Jesus? I'm going to build 3 shelters. And actually, the word here would describe like a temporary booth. I'm going to build 3 shelters for you and Moses and Elijah. And what's interesting is that these shelters were used as part of an annual feast in the Jewish culture, the Feast of Tabernacles, one of the holiest feasts on the calendar. And part of what this feast said, part of what these shelters represented, is that they represented the past, that God had rescued his people out of Egypt. But that week, when these shelters were used, also looked towards a future when God would bring about this new world and the Messiah. And so Peter's like, "Hey, let's build some houses, but not just any houses. Let's build the things that talk about the past and the future coming together." Because you almost get this sense that Peter realizes something of the past and something of the future is coming together in this very moment. I think in the building of the shelters that Peter talks about, you also get the sense that he doesn't want this to end. I mean, we get this. Maybe you've like had moments in life that you're like, "I just wish this could go on forever." Maybe you've been on vacation, you're like, "I just don't want this vacation to end." Or maybe you've had a special event, a wedding or a birthday or something, you're just like, "Gosh, I don't want this moment to end. This is a special moment." You get that Peter's kind of saying, "Look, we realize something's happening here that we don't want to go. We want to stay." Peter saw glory, and you get the sense that he really didn't want to go back down the mountain to ordinary things. Again, we get that. We know glory, those moments where it just seems like this is what life is. This is the moment that seems to connect with everything in us. We know that those moments, we could say it this way, that glory is more enjoyable than ordinary things. We get where Peter's coming from. But what if this event, what if this transfiguration, what if this moment of glory transforming the ordinary actually starts to say that there's a new relationship between the things of glory and the things that we consider ordinary? What if they're intersect in ways that we never thought before? Watch what happens next in verse 5. You can kind of start to see this unfold here. While Peter was still speaking, a cloud covered them, and a voice from the cloud said, "This is my son." So this voice is God the Father saying, "This is my son, whom I love, with him I am well pleased. Listen to him." And when the disciples heard this, they fell face down to the ground, terrified. But Jesus came and touched them and said, "Get up. Don't be afraid." And when they looked up, they saw no one except Jesus. Now, if you were hearing this story, a cloud in the first century, a cloud represented in the Jewish scriptures God's presence. And at times, there would be moments in the Jewish scriptures where a voice would speak from the cloud. This isn't the first time that this has happened. Most famously, when Moses was called up the mountain of Mount Sinai to receive the Ten Commandments back in the book of Exodus, a cloud covered the mountain for 6 days, and after 6 days, Moses went up called by God from a voice from in the cloud. Interesting, this story begins by saying after 6 days. That's another story for another time. But a voice speaking from a cloud is something that was common. It was a symbol of God's presence. And the same thing happens here. This voice speaks. And this voice of God the Father isn't the first time that he's spoken. In fact, going back to Matthew chapter 4, Jesus gets baptized and a voice from heaven speaks and almost says almost something very similar to this moment. But why? Why the voice? What's the purpose of the voice speaking in this particular moment? Well, I think even going back to the story of Moses and the voice speaking to Moses, that part of the purpose back in Exodus of the voice speaking to Moses is so that the people would listen to Moses. They would get an idea that Moses has this unique relationship with God. If God's speaking to Moses audibly, and we can all hear that, he's one that we need to follow because he speaks for God. I wonder if the same's happening here, that God the Father is saying, hey, you need to listen to Jesus. This is my son. How much more from a leader to a son? This is one to listen to. And to listen, by the way, means to obey. It's the same idea in Jewish thinking. This is one to follow and to obey. Notice here, too, he's not talking to Moses and Elijah. He's talking here to the disciples. This is one you are to listen to follow. Obey. But what's interesting about this whole scene, and this is where I think that the text starts to make a turn for us today and starts to kind of connect with our stories in our world and our life here today, is that notice the implication behind this. That Jesus is one that the disciples are meant to obey, to listen to. In other words, there are going to be moments coming up in their immediate and distant future where Jesus is going to teach, Jesus is going to lead them a certain way, Jesus is going to unpack a certain way of life for them to follow. In other words, this voice calling them to obey Jesus isn't meant for the mountain. Yeah, in that moment, if Jesus asked them to do something, I mean, they see him in glory, they see Moses and Elijah there, they're hearing voices from heaven, yeah, we'll do whatever you want. If you're a parent and you've had these moments with your kids and it's like this calm night at home and everyone's watching a movie and cuddly and all this stuff, if you ask your kid to do something in that moment, they're going to go do it. It's the other moments. It's the moments where life isn't as perfect as it could be. This moment of this voice speaking to the disciples is for them to go back down the mountain. In other words, this moment of glory isn't the end of the story. It means something for them when they go back down the mountain. That somehow what's happened to Jesus, this idea that glory could intersect our ordinary life, means something for how they live next. That they, when their eyes get dulled by the trials of life, when the glory and Moses and Elijah and the voices from heaven aren't right there in that moment, that they can hold on. It's like, no, this is the moment to obey. This is the moment to follow. I think it's the same for us today. I mean, what if in your life, the greatest moments aren't these grand moments, these massive moments when you're on a stage, figuratively speaking? What if they're not these big, huge moments with everyone watching? What if the best, the most important moments of your life are the unseen acts of faithfulness in your everyday? What if somehow you could choose to see? What if somehow you believed that it's in the everyday, the ordinary, the mundane even, we might say, that there's something of heaven in those moments? There's something of glory. So the story ends this way, that verse 9, they come back down the mountain, because again, that's what we would expect. They weren't meant to stay there. Thank you for your offer of housing, Peter. We're good. We're meant to not stay there. This is something we're to take back down the mountain. And so they start to go down the mountain, verse 9, and Jesus tells them, hey, don't tell anyone what you have seen until the Son of Man has been raised from the dead. The disciples asked him, okay, then why didn't the teachers of the law say that Elijah must come first? Jesus replied, to be sure, Elijah comes and will restore all things. But I tell you, Elijah has already come, and they did not recognize him, but have done to him everything they wished. In the same way, the Son of Man is going to suffer at their hands. Then the disciples, Matthew adds, understood that he was talking to them about John the Baptist. So Jesus and his disciples, after this profound moment, they come down the mountain. Which for me, we could almost stop the story right there. For me, like, that's hope right there. That the God, that the Son of God, the one that glory shines upon, that whose place he owns in heaven, is willing to come back down the mountain to ordinary people. Do you think it was going to get better down the mountain? No, I mean, here he has the voice of his heavenly Father. He has Moses and Elijah. He has glory shining, emanating from him. What is he going to get back down the mountain? Problems. Difficulty. People like you and me driving him nuts. But that's what he chose to do. That's hope for me, that the God of the universe, the Son of God, would be willing to come back down the mountain to normal people like you and me. And then he tells his disciples, they have two strange interactions, I think, and already a strange story. He says, don't tell them what you've seen. I'm like, hold on. Why not? Why are we not tweeting this? Come on, why, you know, I had my Instagram story going. What's wrong? Why can't we tell this? We don't really know, but here's a couple guesses on my part. One is that there were only three disciples up there with him, but there were 12 in total. And the disciples, if you read the stories about Jesus, they had this propensity to like create division among themselves. They would talk about out loud in front of each other who was better than each other. Can you imagine going into work tomorrow and you're like, well, I know I'm better than him. And then, you know, I mean, just having that, that's weird, but that's what they would do. And so maybe Jesus is like, you know what, don't create division. There are 9 who didn't see what you just saw and heard what you heard. But I wonder too, and this is just my guess, and you can throw it away if you don't like it. I wonder if part of the reason he doesn't want them to tell is that because they could spend the rest of their days on earth living only off a story and not actually putting it into practice. I mean, Jesus is with them. I mean, later, he says, later this will inspire you, but for now, this might distract you. You don't realize that you're with me right now. We have things to do. Now is the time to act. Now is the time to tell people and to bring about in our world this sense that this idea that the glory of heaven could transform our ordinary lives. Maybe Jesus didn't want to get them distracted, but wanted to propel them into action here and now. The other conversation they have is about a theological question the disciples have, because you can imagine they go through that experience, they have some questions, and so here's one of their questions. They're like, Jesus, we know that Elijah's supposed to come. We already covered that. We know from the prophets that they expected Elijah to come and prepare the way from the Messiah. And so they have a question, Jesus, was that it? Like, what just happened with Moses? Was that the coming that we were all expecting? And Jesus says, hang on, actually, Elijah already came. And everybody missed him. That wasn't Elijah coming. Elijah already came and everyone missed him. In fact, Matthew tells us that who he was talking about here was John the Baptist. He says, John came and he prepared the way for the coming Messiah. No one got it. No one got that he was this Elijah figure. And in fact, what they did is they mistreated him, and eventually John was killed. And so Jesus says, look, that Elijah figure has already come, which is interesting for a couple reasons. One, it means that Jesus, in essence, is saying, who did John prepare the way for? He prepared the way for Jesus. And so he's like, I'm this Messiah. I'm this starting, God's future starting here. With me, the past and the future coming together here in me. And the other thing he tells them, in essence, is saying, just as they treated John, just as they mistreated him and killed him, they're going to do the same thing to this Messiah figure, to me. which thank you very much, Jesus, as we're walking down the mountain from this great moment and we've had this incredible time together, and now you're talking about death again. But I think this moment here on this mountain actually connects to Jesus' future and what he will later die for on the cross. Because this moment of glory, this moment actually has more connections to Jesus and the crucifixion than we maybe realize. I mean, think about this. That here on this mountain, Jesus is revealed in glory. And there on a hill outside of Jerusalem, Jesus will be revealed in shame on the cross. Here on this mountain, his clothes shine bright. But there on that hill, and a short time later, his clothes will be stripped off and gambled for. Here on this mountain, he's surrounded by two of Israel's holiest and greatest known figures. And there on that hill of crucifixion, he'll be surrounded by two common criminals. Here on this mountain, a cloud, a bright cloud, will envelop them. And there on that hill, the world will go dark at the death of the Son of God. And all of that happens. All of that connects because Jesus went down the mountain. That this moment of glory wasn't reserved and set aside just for that mountain, but would find its way onto the cross. That Jesus was willing to take this glory that was his and his right and go back down the mountain and face the worst of humanity. But instead of humanity snuffing out the glory of God, the glory of God brought new life for people who desperately need it. In fact, Paul, in one of his later letters, writes it this way. He says, look, we don't need help from God. What we need is new life. And he says, in one of his letters to the Ephesians, he says, you were dead in your transgressions and sins. He says, but because of his great love for us, God, who is rich in mercy, made us alive with Christ. In other words, because Jesus went down the mountain, because Jesus went up the cross, because Jesus was raised from the dead, he brings people from death to life. That the ordinary, the destructiveness of death is changed into something glorious. That is what is offered to anyone who puts their faith in Jesus. That is what we're about. When you choose to follow Jesus, you're choosing to be a part of a glorious life that Jesus set in motion. The cross did not snuff that out. These moments are more connected than we realize. Jesus has done for you what no one else would do for you. He's brought you from death to life. I think we can start to see and start to put some pieces together of what this means for us and what this transfiguration could begin to say about how we live life here and how we live life here on the peninsula. I think in essence it means that glory comes to ordinary people. That somehow this moment of glory on that mountain, what happened to Jesus wasn't reserved for that, but it fueled what happened when they went down the mountain. I love this quote from one Bible commentator. He puts in, you've got to hold on to this, you might want to take a photo of it. He says, talking about this moment, he says, the moment of glory, Jesus up on this mountain, he says, the moment of glory does not exist for its own sake. It's not just like some theological idea. I've heard this story, I've read this story personally, I grew up in church, I've never really took this story apart from just leaving it up here on some theological shelf. And it has theological truths. It has a lot pulled into the story of what God's been doing throughout history. We could spend all afternoon talking about how this story connects. But that's not where it's meant to live. The moment of glory does not exist for its own sake. It exists to clothe the common things with a radiance they never had before. Maybe part of what this transfiguration and how it begins to intersect with your life and mine is it begins to tell us, you know what? These ordinary things in our lives maybe aren't as ordinary as we think. Maybe there's meaning and purpose in your life more than you ever realize. Maybe God's doing something in your story more than you've ever given him credit for, more than you've ever paid attention to. Maybe because glory came down a mountain, glory transforms your ordinary way of living. I think it means that God's not done putting together your story. I think if it means, if you're here today and there's hope for you where it seems hopeless, I think it means that there's a future for you where the present may seem bleak. I think it means for you today that you can look back on all the good things in your past and know that God's putting them together for something even better, but you can also look back on the non-good of your past. And you can know that this good God we sing about is even putting those things together for a better story. I think it means that you can sit in a meeting and look and see the glory of God. You can get the kids dressed. You can go for a walk. That all of these moments are actually holy moments. A lot of times we separate those. Like, well, I'll just do this, and then I'm going to like have some time with God. And then I'm going to do this, and that will be a God thing. No. What if every moment is an opportunity to see the glory of God at work? What if in every moment God is calling you to something more? What if in every moment he's calling you up a mountain to see something glorious so that you could go back down and live a new way? I wonder if you're like me, maybe we just need to ask ourselves a question. Maybe the next time, or even as today, or as you go through your week this week, maybe ask yourself a question like this. God, show me, maybe this could be prayer for you, show me how you are at work in this moment. Show me how your glory is transforming what just seems so bizarre to me, or maybe seems hurtful to me, or maybe seems oppressive to me, whatever your situation is this week. God, show me how you're at work here. Show me something more. Show me how this connects, and watch and see what God might do. What if every moment is actually a holy moment where God is calling you to know more of him? And I think this happens because of Jesus. Because what Jesus has done on the cross, what happened on this Mount of Transfiguration, what happened on that hill of Calvary, it means that you matter. And if you matter, then every part of you and every part of your story matters. One last quote, I love this from a modern writer. He says it this way. He says, listen to your life. See it for the fathomless mystery that it is. In the boredom and in the pain of it, as also the excitement and the gladness of it, touch, taste, smell your way to holy and hidden in the hidden heart of your life, because in the last analysis, all moments are key moments. And life itself is grace. How is life grace? I think life is grace because all of life matters. If your life matters, then every moment matters. There's an opportunity to see God and what God is doing in your story. And there's opportunity for others to see God through your story. Maybe you are where you are. Maybe you're sitting here today. Maybe you're going to do what you do this afternoon and this week so that God's idea is that he would draw you closer through this. I believe that God wants a personal relationship with each person here. And I believe your story is not distant from that purpose. It's actually part of it. So if it's part of that purpose, maybe ask, God, show me how this connects. Show me how you're drawing me in this moment. And begin to see your world less from ordinary, maybe even mundane experiences to an opportunity where God is seeking to show himself to you more and to draw you into something more about life. Glory can transform your ordinary, and you and I can do that when we choose to see that every moment is maybe a little bit more than ordinary. I want to pray for you as we close in song this morning, and pray for you in your everyday moments. If you're like me, kind of the everyday are these harder moments. It would be easier to stay on the mountain. I'm with Peter. Like, let's build the houses. Let's build them really strong so they'll last for a while. Let's put in carpeting, put in nice shades and all that. We can hang out here for a while. That's not where life's lived. Life's lived down the mountain. And we're going to see more of that next week as they come down off this mountain and begin to have interactions with people who are broken. And you're going to see how Jesus reacts and responds in those moments. But we all have those moments. You live those moments. I live those moments. And so I want to pray for you and pray for me that we would make a choice to be willing to see Jesus in every moment, to be willing to ask God, God, show me how you're at work, how you're connecting this in to something more. Let's pray. God, thanks that that our stories matter, that the cross announces that we matter, and because we matter, our stories matter, our experiences matter. Thanks for grace that you show us throughout our lives, even when we don't deserve, and especially when we don't deserve, that picture of grace that says you keep working our story for good. Thank you, as we sang earlier, that you're bringing us back to life, that you've brought people from death to life because of what Jesus did on the cross. And that you're still bringing us from death to life by showing us of something more, of something better that you're doing. God, I pray for those of us in this room whose stories maybe don't seem like they have a lot of glory in them. That maybe there are people in this room, God, that aren't sure what this week will hold. Maybe there's stress. Maybe there's an immense tension of what's about to happen. I pray, God, that you would show them that there's something more. That maybe even in the midst of all that, glory can transform the ordinary. May we be people, God, who go down the mountain, not forgetting what we saw, but carrying it with us. Would we be people who live in a new way in what we often consider mundane? Would you spur us to prayer, to conversations with you in the moments when we're sitting in traffic or walking through the neighborhood, feeding the kids? Would you remind us that these are holy moments? That they matter, and that you're at work drawing us more to yourself. Thank you for your great love for us, your mercy towards us, that even though we were dead, even though we were far gone from ordinary, you made us alive in Jesus. Thank you for the cross that where glory conquered the worst of humanity and tells us that there's a new story. May we choose Jesus. May we be people who center our attention on Jesus.